Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Well, how's my DIY going, I hear
you
ask?
That's exactly what I was just about to say. I mean, last week you left us hanging. Now we need an update. Like, it's been almost a week, so we need an update. What's going on?
Well, can I just tell you that this is not a small job, okay? I genuinely thought I'd bash it out in a day, but like, oh yeah, no problems. Just lay a few dust sheets down. I've been to Screwfix a couple of times. I should get shares in that company now. I've had to get new tools. There's a thing called frog tape, which
yes.
I didn't know about, which you stick around all of the like corners. Cornicing. What's the thing on the floor that goes around the edge?
The skirting board.
So you can see it's. I've become really, really, really tuned in with all the DIY chat. Basically, it's gone all right. Actually, I think I've done a fairly good job. I'll be posting befores and afters so everyone can make their judgment. But I'm covered in paint. I'm absolutely shattered, and I think I've put my back and neck out. So
is this going to be a new career path for you? Are we going to see you popping up DIY with Zoe anytime soon now?
The TV channels are crashing in for a gig. They're desperate to sign me up.
Oh my god, you're going to be on Changing Rooms.
I'm basically Carol Smiley.
You're going to be the new Carol Smiley. Yes. I'm sure she joined in sometimes as well. So there we go. You've got more. You've got more than Carol because you'll actually be able to do it as well.
I mean, I'm a joke really, aren't I? But at least I've given it a shot. Dozer was so cute. He came back and he was like, I'm so proud of you. And I was like, I actually don't think you're being sarcastic. I actually think I've done an all right job. But yeah, as I said, I'm not sure I'll be doing all the rooms in the house, but at least my dressing room is done.
I love that you started on your dressing room as
I
well.
Know. How are you, George?
I'm good. We're just trying to pick back up potty training again with Gigi.
How's that going?
Well, it's difficult with her because she holds her poo. So she doesn't really like pooing or weeing anywhere. Whether that's in a nappy, in knickers, on the toilet, on the bed. I mean, she holds it. So it's been really tough to like put any more pressure on her. Do you know what I mean? So she was doing really well, and then she didn't go to the toilet for about a week, and I thought, no, let's leave it. So we have left it for a few months, and then nursery said to me, she basically goes on the potty in the toilet at nursery. So you need like, maybe you should start following it up at home. And so I've basically put a potty in her bedroom, a potty downstairs. She's got a thing on the toilet seat, and we've figured out she doesn't like doing it in front of us. So by putting them like in her, you know, one in her bedroom. Yesterday she went in and did a poo in her bedroom, and I gave her an ice cream and, you know, all the celebrations and all that kind of stuff. But
what,
it's just
what a place to do a poo as well.
In your bedroom.
Imagine that, just getting up and doing a big poo in the corner of the room.
I know. Don't. Like, I thought
Did you shut the door?
Oh, I didn't know she was doing it. She just went in there and did it. So I don't know what her thought process was. But anyway, I don't really know what the best way to go is with Gigi, because she just does her own thing. She'll probably wake up one day and go, I don't wear nappies anymore.
Yeah, no more nappies for me. I love that you said as well that she's like codged on really early in life that doing a poo in front of somebody is not the most relaxing thing, because Kit is still obsessed with getting me into the bathroom. He holds my hands. He looks at me right in the eyes and he goes, And I'm like, I do not feel okay about this. I know you're my son and I know it's only pooing, but like, I don't know where to look. And he's like, look at me, mummy. Look at me, mummy. I'm like, oh, is this some sort of sick thing that children do just to make people really comfortable? I don't know.
Because when do you learn that? Like, when do you learn that weeing and pooing in front of someone is not normal? Because Axel would just do it anywhere. He'd probably just drop his pants like on the way to school in front of you. He wouldn't care. He's got no like... He's not shy about doing a wee or a poo anywhere.
I don't think everyone has this problem. I think some couples are quite happy. Like, I don't mind doing a wee in front of Dawes. Would you wee in front of James?
Yeah, yeah, I'll wee in front of James, but I won't poo in front of James.
Oh, God,
not.
No.
No way.
But Dawes, I'll be
in front
chatting
of anyone.
I'll be chatting to Dawes and I'll be like, where are you going? And he'll be just going into the bathroom with the door opening. But oh, sorry, I'm just having a poo. I'm like, no, we're having a conversation about the food shop.
Yeah, close the door. Like, I don't need to see. There has to be some boundary, right? Like, there literally has to be a boundary somewhere. And that is definitely my boundary.
I'd love to get your thoughts on this, those of you that are listening. We'll put a little box up. Poo in front of your partner or not?
How has this turned into poo chat? I'm sorry, anyone who doesn't want to hear about poo. I don't know what's happened to us. Maybe this 2020 poo.
Yes. Did you mean to do that? That was fucking brilliant. Well done. Excellent. Welcome to 2020 poo. Okay, well, we'll move on and we'll, because some people really don't like this chat, like my mother. And we'll leave this chat and we'll move into the chat, the conversation today, because really wonderful conversation that took place last week of a mum to multiples. Now, we have spoken to Alison Perry before, who obviously had twins. We haven't really spoken to anybody, but we haven't spoken to anybody who's ever given birth to triplets.
No, and also I think what's so interesting about this is she had a single pregnancy first and then she went on to have triplets, because, you know, before, you know, if you chat to any mates who've had twins, or I don't know any people who've had triplets, but I can imagine if they've got nothing to compare it to, it's really like, well, you know, I don't know any different, so this is just my reality. Whereas our guest really does have the and also, you know, she had IVF, and then also her pregnancy before was a natural pregnancy. So there's lots of comparison. There's lots of comparison throughout the episode. We talk about, you know, different parenting and how you can give your kids exactly the same things and yet they can all have completely different personalities. So even if you don't have multiples, then there is a lot to take away from this episode.
Oh my God, totally. Yeah, this definitely isn't just a chat for multiples. Also, our guest today spoke about what it's like to have a premature baby, babies. So if you've experienced that as well, there'll be a lot for you to take away in there. And also just her like views on like what happened to her when she told her work and stuff that she was pregnant with triplets, like the people's reactions and stuff. There's a lot in there for you guys. So we'll hand it over to our guest. George, who are we chatting to?
Today, we are chatting to Rebecca Woolridge.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the podcast. An absolute treat and an honour to be sitting down with someone who has definitely had her hands full over the last 5 years after giving birth to triplets. We're going to be speaking to this amazing lady all about her parenting journey, how she conceived. She's a blogger. She talks about her life of, having premature babies, but also handling three of them at the same time. I'm sure you follow her on Instagram already. She is mummy_2_triplets_and_bro.
Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't sound very convincing, does it? That's my general and daily answer.
You've been sort of sharing your parenting journey online, obviously, you know, since the triplets were born. But just take us back to the kind of process to becoming pregnant with the girls. And obviously you've got an elder, Felix, as well, who's 8, is that right? So you had one. Tell us a story.
I'd been trying for a baby for many years, and Felix was the miraculous conception. So we conceived Felix naturally, which was really wonderful. And then we loved it so much, we wanted to have another baby. And but it wasn't, we experienced secondary infertility, and which we anticipated. So we decided to try IVF one more time. We'd considered adoption. We'd actually got quite a way down the adoption route, but that is another story. So through that, we actually decided that we would give IVF one more go, and it was the first time it worked.
Oh, wow. So you say one more go. So how many rounds of IVF had you had before?
That was our fifth go. So when we conceived Felix, we were actually days away from starting our fifth IVF treatment. And we found out, we went away on holiday to relax prior to the treatment starting. And it was there that my period was late. And David said to me, come on, do a test. I was like, don't be so ridiculous. This was like 6 years into trying for a family by this point. Don't be so ridiculous. Yeah. I just want to pretend for a few days longer. And then finally, he convinced me to do a test. And it was just incredible. So then I called up the hospital and they said, I know, you're calling to arrange your drugs to start the treatment. And I said, no, I'm calling to tell you that I'm pregnant. And she was just like, wow.
Oh,
so it was just incredible, absolutely magical. And we thought, oh, well, perhaps, you know, my body can do this. Perhaps there's a chance of it happening again. But unfortunately, it didn't. And I'd promised to myself that I would never, ever do IVF again. Never. But
really,
why?
Because of what you went through over the years, Rebecca?
Yeah, I think the hurt and the obviously the physical aspects of it, but also the emotional aspects. It's such a roller coaster journey. And then we started the adoption journey, which I've not actually ever shared before, but we were told that David worked in retail, and we were told that he would need to not work on a Saturday. Literally, this was it. He couldn't work on a Saturday for 6 months before they would pursue our application to board. And at that point, it came the week after our social worker had said to us, I'm really panicking. I don't think I'm going to be able to process your application in time because they have to do it within a certain period of time. And then the following week, it was like, right, I need to see David not working on Saturdays for 6 months because you don't like it when he works at the weekends. Like, well, how does that work with anyone who works in retail or shift worker? So I was so shocked and so fed up with my life being in the control of other people, be it doctors in this case, social workers, that I said to David, right, it motivated me. I'm going to try IVF one last time. And my goodness, it worked. And look where we are.
So when you had the transplant, the what do they call
transfer?
It? The transfer.
Yeah.
Did they say that how many like healthy follicles there were?
Yeah, we were abroad, so it's quite a different approach.
Right.
In fact, where we were in Cyprus and they wanted to put more in, and we said we'd been warned that this would happen, and we said no, thank goodness, because they put three embryos in, and all three took.
So what? How did you feel the moment they said to you that there were three heartbeats? Because I just can't imagine.
Well, we had a blood test done where they do your hormone readings, and we were told by the person who reported on the results that there's a party going on in there. So we had an idea that this was either a very strong, healthy pregnancy, which can sometimes be a high reading of this hormone, but often it means that there's multiples. So, and when she delivered the news, it was kind of like sympathetic to me. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, and there's another one. It was kind of like negative before And so I just burst out crying because, like, the tone and the feeling I was getting, because obviously it's quite a risky pregnancy. So that's where, as a medical person, that's where she was coming from. That, yeah, there is another one in there, and you will get spoken to about reduction.
What does that mean, reduction?
So quite often parents of multiples will have a consultant will talk to them about, do you want to reduce the pregnancy to make it safer? Because it's known that multiple pregnancies can be risky. And actually no one ever had that conversation with me, fortunately. I never had to have that conversation with anyone. But so when I first found out, I was just really distressed because of the way, I mean, she wasn't trying to be horrible. She was trying to be, I suppose, in her own way, kind, but it was kind of like, oh, this is risky pregnancy now. And I was just, how am I going to afford it? How am I going to love three children like I did Felix? I'd had this wonderful, like, one-to-one parenting experience with him. How would we manage, you know?
Rebecca, where was your head at when the person that was doing the transfer, or you had the discussion with the people that were doing the clinic that were doing the transfer, when they said to you, you know, should we put more than one in? Should we put two in? Should we put three in? What were you thinking? Were you going, put three in, we've got a chance of getting one here?
Yeah, well, we were advised at that time, I don't know whether it's still the same advice that's given to couples experiencing infertility, but we were advised the more you put in, they fight each other for space. So the more chance you've got of a pregnancy occurring. And so we were told, oh, no, it's very unlikely to have multiple pregnancy. They just fight each other for space. That's how you sort of sold the idea of having more put in. But of course, for this clinic, and understandably so, they want good results so that they can sell more treatment. That's not me being cynical. That's just truth. They want you to get pregnant, which is really good.
Well, you want to, yeah, exactly.
But I didn't. The truth is, I would not have chosen to get pregnant with triplets. I wouldn't change it at all now. But it's not as safe as having a singleton or even twins.
Yeah, of course.
And clearly, that transpired to be true with us as well.
Yeah. How was your pregnancy? Like, because obviously you can compare it to a single pregnancy to having multiples.
And I can also compare it, I guess, to an IVF pregnancy, because for a bulk of that time, you're still taking medication to support the pregnancy. I was sick as a dog the whole way through. It was a horrible pregnancy, sadly. I was scared. It was uncomfortable. So it was a very, very different experience. Clearly, I was absolutely over the moon to be pregnant, that it worked. So that in itself was a dream. And I think, I suppose, because I'd wanted it so long, you just accept that the not so nice bits are happening. I felt sick, right, I'm going to deal with it because this is all I ever wanted.
Yeah, and I love that. And I think, but it's also okay to have a moan and a bitch about how sick you were. You know, just, you've got to say it how it is. I think that we were talking about this the other day, because one of my friends has just found out she's pregnant, and she was like, it was like a light bulb moment where the sickness just went ding. And she was like, I just feel sick and I've got my head over the loo all day. And she was like, I keep Googling. Some women have it for their whole pregnancies. And I was like, I know. I was like, there's nothing I can tell you apart from just hang on in there. Because for me, mine started at whatever it was, 4 weeks. And then at 13 weeks, it just went boop.
It's like a light goes off, doesn't
that was it?
Same with Felix. I mean, I started the pregnancy. I ended the pregnancy with Felix like 2 stone lighter than when I began, because that first trimester I'd been so, and it was the same with the girls as well.
So you lost weight while, because you felt so awful.
Yeah, but I did have that 13 week thing where I felt healthy and good with Felix.
Yeah.
How did people react to you when, you know, they'd, you know, maybe talk to you, be like, oh, you know, when are you due? And you told them that you were expecting three babies. What were people's reactions like?
Quite a lot of, a lot of people at work were like, oh, you're mad, you know, and it was like, so quite a negative reaction at work. And then obviously I had a lot of friends that I built this community of people who were experiencing infertility, where I had really positive reactions. And then, like, you know, surprise from strangers, because I just looked immediately pregnant. And I remember having a conversation with a couple where I was out here. I looked like I was ready to drop. And I was probably about 16 weeks, something like that. And they were lots of nice interactions, but some of the grumpy people at work were like, you're mad,
you're crazy, how are you going to cope with that? It's like, well, I'm going to have to, because I'm the mum, so I'm going to have to get on with it.
I've got no choice.
And you don't have a lot of choice in the whole, you know, you're going through fertility treatments, so again, choice is elusive, isn't it?
Now, there's so many questions that Georgia and I want to ask. I think we're going to come to like prep in a minute, but I really want to talk to you about the births and at what point did that sort of evolve? I mean, did you go into labour? Did they induce you? Did you have cesareans? How does it work?
Well, I've had two very different birth experiences, and I'm pleased to say that, because if the triplets birth had been the only one, then it would, it wasn't a very pleasant story, unfortunately. But with Felix, I was really determined to, I hypnobirthed, I was determined to have him naturally, and I did do that. And then with the girls, I'd had a bleed at home, and fortunately I was in the hospital when I hemorrhaged, and it was all action stations, and it was like, we've got to get these girls out. And I was 29
weeks. How many
weeks?
29 weeks.
Yeah. And it was touch and go. They said if I'd been at home, they wouldn't have been able to get us to the hospital in time. So I had two very different birth experiences, and I'm really pro, I mean, obviously I'm pro mum and baby being healthy, that's the most important thing, but I was so pro natural birthing prior to my experience with girls, and I thought it was like a gift I wanted to give to Felix. I wanted him to arrive naturally, and he took his blooming time. It was a long, long back-to-back labour, but we did it. But then I look at the characters of my girls now, particularly Amelie, who's really like Felix, and I think she had such a different arrival into the world, and she's so similar to him in her character. Yeah. And I say that out of reassurance to any women who, like me, back with Felix, put that pressure on themselves. I think, ultimately, yeah. I believe that our bodies and babies know what they're doing, and we need as little medical intervention as possible if everything's going well. But we can equally have healthy, happy babies if it doesn't work out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's such a lot of pressure, isn't there, George? This is a discussion that George and I talk about endlessly about it, because when you have your first kid, before you go into it, you have a very set way, a plan that you have to you have to stick to. I've got to stick to the plan, and I can't do it any other way. And all the language and stuff that you hear in NCT and all this stuff, it's just not okay. And I felt it. I know that you felt it too, George, just carrying these mountains on my shoulders, thinking, no, I can't have any pain medication, and I can't have an epidural because that was in red during one of my classes and all this bullshit. And actually, I needed some help.
And also, I guess the other thing is, the more pressure you put on yourself, the less likely that your body is going to be able to do those things. So we almost just need to get rid of the pressure and birth our babies however we want to. Because any stress and pressure in pregnancy is not a good thing.
I think as long as a woman's informed and knows her choices, and that if through those choices she makes a choice to have an epidural, then that's her choice, and it will work how she wants it to work. But I think you're right, the language around, and some women don't know their choices. But I remember when I started my hypnobirthing teaching, and she laid down pictures in front of me. This was the local birthing centre. This is a hospital. Obviously, the hospital looked very sterile and medical, and you've got a choice. And I was like, have I? Because I didn't go to NCT. And so to have that choice, and as it happened, he did come into the world naturally, but I hadn't slept for two nights when he did, because he was a back-to-back labour. And as a result, my breastfeeding journey suffered. So there's always because I was so flipping tired by the time I got home. And then I was up for five nights trying to get that established. So if I'd had a different birth, would my breastfeeding journey have worked better? So it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
It's interesting you say that, because I've never thought about that. Yeah. But I had two very different labours. The first one, like you, back to back, 2 days, absolutely exhausted. Just by the time I took Luna home, I didn't know what I was doing. And my breastfeeding, she wouldn't latch on properly. I was so exhausted. All that. With Kit, because I knew what to do, second time round was so much faster. I had the epidural, came home, he breastfed like that, and was just like, we were just away, because I just felt like I hadn't been through a car crash. It's interesting. I never really put the two and two together.
It's weird. I was with a friend on Friday who has a newborn, and she gave birth on Christmas Day, and she was like, I just feel like I haven't had a second to recover. And I was like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because she went into labor on like the 24th or whatever, had her on the 25th, so 24 hours of labor. Then, you know, she's recovering and can't really move. Then she comes out of hospital and it was like Christmas time, so she had family and stuff. Then it's like, I know, and she's literally just like, when do I get to like recoup?
Never.
And it's no, you don't. And that's what I said to her. I was like, well, I mean, I can help you in some ways, but you kind of never will. My tip to anyone is to take all the help and like don't feel bad in those first few weeks if you just want to sleep and you know a house is a state and you don't want to talk to anyone. Take that time, because like you say, who knows what impact that has on breastfeeding? Who knows what impact that has on your mental health going forward? Like, it has such a huge impact. I mean, we just got to look after ourselves, haven't we?
We have. I think a lot of people on the second birth, I don't know whether you've heard it, but I've heard a lot of people say, I'm shutting the doors and no one's coming in this time. Because I remember the night we came home with Felix, and a group of my friends who'd kind of been on that infertility journey with me. So we're like, hallelujah, this baby's here. This is amazing, which is really lovely. But I'd been up for three nights by this point. I needed to be still and quiet with my baby and find our way. And they're all in the house like, oh, this is so exciting. And my friend said to me afterwards, you just weren't yourself. And you're like, I wanted to struggle. What do you think? We should have said no, because I needed to be sleeping at that point. And I think the second time round, you can get a bit more confidence to say, actually, no, this time we need to do it in a way that works better for us. And you can come in a week or two when we're ready.
We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we? But also, Rebecca, the second time round, you had three babies to hold.
Oh, exactly.
So just tell us. So you said that the birth wasn't a great experience for you. And I'm sorry that you had to go through all of that. But the babies came out, you know, in good enough shape. One of them, your littlest, stayed in for, was it 11 weeks?
Well, they were all, Amelie came home after 11 weeks. She came home on her 40-week due date.
Yeah.
But her girls, as she calls them, they all call each other my girls. They came home, I think it was on the 22nd of December. So they were in time for Christmas and she came home a few days later.
Right.
So they were all in for a long time. Then we were home and we'd basically been told by the doctors, you need to treat it as a hospital environment because it was winter and their immunity would not be strong enough to stand up to grown up germs. And as it transpired thereafter, we just had this horrific cycle of trauma after trauma, which is really sad that that's happened. But I think trauma teaches you some very valuable gifts in life. That's why I have to reframe it and hold on to the positive. And they're still here, which is just wonderful, obviously.
Could you just share some details of what happened?
Well, we'd had one. My mum brought round her best friend we'd had, and one of my best friends came to visit. So we had very limited visitors. So we think we know when it happened, but basically they all got paraflu. And so 9 days after Emily had come home, she stopped breathing in my arms. And fortunately on that day, David was home, else because Emily's baby number two, triplet number two, we'd feed them in order. So I would have put her down and gone on to feed Etta. But because David was home, she was in my arms, thank goodness. And so I felt that she'd gone still. And so then she, an ambulance came and they took her to hospital. And then while she was in the ambulance going in, she stopped breathing again. So they had to call her in as a cardiac arrest. And then when she was in the hospital, she kept stopping breathing. They kept bringing around, and then they had to induce a coma because they said that it wasn't safe to leave. She couldn't, her body couldn't cope with this. So then we just got her home after, as I say, 11 weeks of being in hospital, and she was back in intensive care. And as she came out of intensive care, Bertie was blue lighted to high dependency as she was going into the decline. So it's always busy with triplets, sometimes in the worst way ever. And so Etta was the only one at that point who wasn't admitted during that experience. And thereafter, there was
and it
just
was flu. And it was a flu.
Paraflu, yeah. So, and I said to the doctor, I said, what would have happened if she hadn't been in my arms? And she just touched my arm and she said, she was in your arms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Gosh. Oh,
God. So that's all gone on. And then, so are you able to enjoy any part at this point of being a mum to triplets? Or are you sort of wading through mud?
I think that every stage has its pros and cons. I think we're getting nearer to the stage where we can talk to the girls and they can understand things more, so we can manage behaviour in a different way. And because Felix and Emily are just like the easiest children ever to parent, so I had to have two out of four, right? they are just so easygoing, so chilled, but so similar in character. Etta and Bertie, my goodness. They
not so
can
much, eh?
Oh yeah. So it can be difficult, and it's quite interesting for me as well, having had triplets, how they've all had access to the same parenting, and yeah,
and they're all completely different.
Yeah, they can be very different in the way they manage situations. In saying that, I do think that they've had very different medical journeys. So I do believe that some of what's happened to Bertie has impacted on her behaviour now. And Etta, she's got no excuse. She's just a madam.
She's just wild. She's the wild one.
We might have some people listening who have got multiples or are due to have multiples. How do you even go about like finding the equipment for them? Because that, you know, when you have one, you have this massive list of things that you need to get. But how, you know, taking them out for the first time, all these firsts that when you have one feels like a huge deal, how is that when you have three, and how do you actually physically do it?
Okay, well, I had what I called the bus chair. So that was our push chair. And any mum of multiples will tell you she'll probably try about five different push chairs. But my favourite was the Peg Perego, and it's kind of long. So you could get through places, but, and it's got power steering. So the dads love that. It's got power steering. But it was just, you couldn't get up a pavement or anything like that. You had to plan your route carefully. And I've got to say, or I'd have one in a carrier and a double buggy. That was the easiest if I was going out and about by myself. So there are things that you probably do differently with multiples that you wouldn't do with a singleton. So, for example, when I felt safe for them to do it, I had like the Milky Mate things. Where they could, you could put a bottle in, so it go, it's like a neck pillow that goes around their neck, and you could put a bottle in it. So I could be feeding. Before I did that, I used to feed them at half hour intervals, so feeding would just take up the whole day. When I felt it was safe enough, then I would put two of them on the Milky Mates, and I would have one, and I'd rotate who I was feeding personally. And then that meant that if anyone was crying, because the risk was when you fed them, when you gave them half hour intervals, the risk was by you got by the time you got to Etta, poor Etta, might be why she's a diva actually. She was always waiting, you know, so she could get upset because she's waiting because she was triplet number three. So the moment I discovered Milky Mates, I knew about them for long before I used them because I didn't feel it was right or safe at that time. And then once I started using them, I was like, oh, why didn't I do this earlier?
Oh, I mean, it blows my mind. I guess you didn't even probably really get out for the first few months because you were in a feeding, sleeping,
nappy
changing, winding cycle.
Yeah, it was just, you know, that thing when you have a baby. I remember like it fondly with Felix where you could laugh about it with the girls. It was a whole different story, but you'd be going to leave the front door and he'd do poo. And you're like, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, yeah, times three, it is just bonkers. So it became easier to stay indoors at times, but also it was safer for us because of their medical issues. So we kind of had medical advice for the first 2 years to stay indoors whilst it was winter.
And are they all well and healthy now?
They are pretty much. Bertie still has outstanding heart surgery, which they're waiting for her to be big enough to have that, but it's not affecting her on a daily basis. She just has to have it to protect herself as an adult, so that's good. And there's a few little things, but I don't know whether it's due to prematurity or whether it would have just these things would have happened anyway, you know. So by and large they're all healthy.
Rebecca, how do you feel now that you are sort of 5 years into your triplet journey? How do you feel as a person, and are you okay? Because it must have taken its toll on you having three premature babies and everything that you've been through.
Yeah, it did. I think, I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder after the birth because, as I say, it was life-threatening to me and the babies. And then I had babies in hospital who were very poorly with various things happening. So I sought out support for that. And I think it's very, very important for mums and dads, parents, to seek out support because you are important too. And if you support yourself and get the right help and support, then you're a better parent. So I needed to have EMDR therapy to manage the bigger traumas, like the birth, like the moment Emily stopped breathing in my arms. Mm-hmm. I needed to process those so I could move forward because I was haunted by, I'd get triggered really, you know, if I was walking down the street and an emergency ambulance went past, that could really, I could want to fall to the floor crying, you know. I was so triggered. I needed to manage those feelings. I needed to process that trauma so that I could be a better parent. So I read a lot about other people who'd survived trauma and what they'd done to manage that. And that is why I started writing my blog, because I thought I had that inspiration and help from reading other people's survival stories. So if I could help other parents who'd either experienced infertility or premature birth or birth trauma, that would be make me feel good, you know, to be able to help others. But it was also very cathartic for me as well.
Yeah. And so is that how, I guess, you got over the trauma, was by writing, reading other people's experiences? Like anyone listening to this, what, you know, what advice would you give them if that, you know, if they've been through something similar?
I think to manage it safely and process it if you try, I remember going out for a meal with another triplet mum who'd had babies that were more premature, actually, than mine, who'd had a very difficult experience. And I remember saying, oh, you've just got to get on with it, haven't you? And I remember feeling quite inadequate. Well, why can't I just get on with it? Why am I having these triggers? Why does it make me want to burst into tears when I see an emergency ambulance? Or Amelie and me used to do this game when she was a baby where she thought it was fabulous, where I'd hold her back and she'd burst out laughing. Well, that was what I did when she stopped breathing, and it would trigger me. So I was like, these things, they come into my mind every day and I can't manage them. And that's because I'd not processed them. So I think if people aren't honest about these things, it can leave other people feeling very isolated and like they're not doing well. I thought I was failing because my mental health was impacted. I look back now, 5 years on, and I think, you were superwoman.
Yeah. Yeah.
You came out of that situation.
Yeah.
You parented three poorly babies, two in particular, who would take hours to feed. There was never a break. You were a superhero and you did really well. And don't listen to that other voice, the other voices around saying, oh, you've just got to get on with it. No, you haven't.
No.
You are valuable. Your feelings are worth it, you know. Yeah. You and to be a better parent as well, even if you don't want to say do it for you, do it as a parent.
Oh, Rebecca, I mean, both Georgia and I think you are a total inspiration.
Absolutely.
I mean, we barely dealt with one at a time, but three at a time, as you said, were poorly and premature and everything else that you've been through. And thank you for documenting it in the way that you do and your blogs. I know that you'll be helping so many other parents who are going through something similar.
I hope so.
If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't found Rebecca, you're welcome, because there you go. We've given her to you.
And Rebecca, I mean, you've given loads of advice during this podcast, but we always like to ask our guests, what is the best piece of advice you've ever been given or that you would give another parent?
I remember my mum's words, actually, about it's the hardest thing that you can ever do is to say no to a child. But it'd be the best thing you ever do in the long run. And I think my best advice would be, let your word be your truth. Mean what you say. Children, I think of boundaries as a great big hug, a great big cuddle for my children. They thrive on them. They feel safe when they know where they stand. And so to have that consistency. And if I say no, that 5 minutes later, I'm not going to change that because I've said, so don't say no if you don't mean it, basically.
Otherwise,
me too. I need to
well, I'm often like, it's one of the hardest things I find is parenting with another person, because quite often the children definitely know where they stand with me. But poor dad, the girls, they'll just have him, like, you know. I say, if you say no, don't 5 minutes later change your mind, because tomorrow when they come and ask you for something, they know that all they've got to do is, like,
nag at him
and he's going
to
get, you know. So it's like, let your word be your truth.
Yeah,
say what
absolutely.
You mean.
And just to finish up, your top products, I think maybe to do, you know, multiples, products for multiples.
Yeah, I think I loved the Baby Bjorn high chair. We had it with Felix. It was great with the girls as well, because I found we always did baby led weaning. So I used to put their food directly onto the tray and you can remove it and wash it. And that worked really well for us. And I loved a dummy bunny. That's what we...
Dummy bunny, where you attach them on.
Because they can cuddle the bunny or whatever it may be, but you know that the dummy's always attached to it, so it's easy to find in the night if they stir, and they know where it is, so they're not disturbing you for the dummy. We like the sleepy head. But particularly because that gave the girls their own space, because we had like a big joint cot at one point. So, we like
to sleep in their individual bits.
Oh, the Baby Bjorn, you might notice a theme here. I do think that Baby Beyond products are very intelligent. They seem to do what they say on the tin.
They do.
So I really like the Baby Beyond toilet seat. The girls just, hardly spent any time on the potty. They just went straight with that toilet seat. Yeah. They just really liked it. And Grow to Bed. Grow to Bed was a lifesaver. So, I mean, I liked their sleeping sacks anyway. But when it came to that transitioning into a single bed, I don't know whether you've seen them, but the duvet is attached to the bed sheet.
Yes.
So they can't fall out of the bed.
I like that. Right. Do you know what? I'm just about to change my daughter into a bed. And that's, I think that's something I probably should get.
Yeah. So they can't fall out. So I really like
Grow
that.
To Bed. Okay.
Grow Amazing. To Bed. And it's got, it's got the pillow case in it, the bed sheet and the duvet cover all in one. It's really easy to change.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
And they can't fall out of bed. That was really
Love
good.
That. You just don't hear thuds in the night. Because sometimes we hear that and we're like, is that Kit falling out of that really high bed that we've got in? No, it's all right. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on. Obviously,
thank
both
you.
Georgia and I think you're a total inspiration, helping so many parents to multiples as well by talking about it across your blog and Instagram. If we kind of didn't answer anything to anybody listening and you really want Rebecca to give you a little message and ask any specific questions, where can they find you?
Okay, so I'm on Instagram as Mommy with a U, Mommy Two Triplets and Bro.
Love it. Thank you so much,
amazing.
Rebecca.
Okay, thank you.
So great to hear that chat, wasn't it?
I know, and I don't know about you, but since we had that chat and I'm like moaning when I've got both kids and they're doing my head in, I suddenly think to myself, imagine if there was four with me now.
Oh my God,
and you know, three of them all going through, well, I don't know, but I guess being the same age, they're all girls, like going through the similar challenges at the same time, like wow.
Yeah,
wow.
What I liked was her chat around boundaries and her views on that, because I guess when you've got triplets, you've got three all the same age, it's like you've got to have the boundaries, otherwise they're just going to run riot. I really respected her for that, and actually I took some of that, like when you say no, if you come back 10 minutes later it's still going to be no, because sometimes
be
I'm
nice,
like no, and then a couple of minutes later I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no, fine. Like, it's like, what's the point in saying no if you're not going to stick to no?
Yeah, no, I am terrible for that, especially with Gigi. Like, you know, I do so many things that I just don't believe in with Gigi. Like, for instance, she's kicking off because she wants something of Axel's, and I go to Axel, oh, just give it to her.
Like, just give it to her.
Just give it to her. It's just easier. But actually, the no is probably the hardest thing to do, but the best thing you can do for your kids, because they like it as well, don't they? You know, as humans, we like to know where we are, we like to know our boundaries, we like to know, like, that kind of stuff. So maybe we need to start practicing what we preach.
Oh God, do we have to?
I don't know. I'll give you an update in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Live.
Next time on the podcast, I'm going to be discussing Luna's early rising again. So look forward to that one.
Okay.
We'll move away from DIY and poo and on to Luna's early rising.
On to early rising. I'm looking forward to the update.
As always, we would absolutely love you to rate, review, subscribe and give the podcast a follow. That would be amazing. And we love seeing your pictures as well, don't we, George?
Yeah, please tag us in your photos. I'm always listening to podcasts at the moment when I'm in the house by myself trying to work and being distracted by the conversations. And also, if you have seen anybody or know anybody who has an amazing story, please do drop us a DM. We're always looking for guests and topics to cover. We're on @MadeByMamas, and we'll be back on Tuesday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at yoquierodineropodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.